As those of you that have followed this program from the beginning know, that we have guests from far and wide, whether they are Taekwondo athletes, authors, movie stars, or people that are related to the Taekwondo field. They've come as far away as Australia, South Korea, the Philippines, and all over the United States. But for today's guest, we didn't have to go very far. He is Master David Zabransky. My name is Mark Sarianis. I'm your host. I'm a third Dan Black Belt, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Taekwondo Life magazine. Master Zabransky is a longtime 30-year Taekwondo practitioner, a Taekwondo master, and he is a recently retired police sergeant from the NYPD. Master Zabransky is a thoughtful, intelligent, and serious martial artist. He is the father of four Taekwondo students, high-achieving Taekwondo students. Three of them are first Dan and above. And we had a really thoughtful conversation. He provides some great insight into martial arts training and law enforcement, the development and changes in Taekwondo over the last 30 years, and his personal perspectives on what one puts into Taekwondo and what one gets out of Taekwondo. I hope you enjoy this program. Be sure to like and subscribe, and be sure to check out the video component of this episode on our YouTube channel, also Taekwondo Life magazine. So we are here today with Master David Zabransky, someone who you'll find out a little bit about, but happens to be a retired New York City police officer, a sergeant. He happens to be a master of Taekwondo, a family man, a father, a community leader, a winner of the 2016 Taekwondo Golden Award, which is a charitable award given by the New York Open Taekwondo Organizing Committee here in New York. Someone that I've had the privilege to train under and beside for quite some time. Somebody who hits very hard. That's his claim to fame, at least as far as I'm concerned, but he's much more well-rounded than that. Thank you, Master Zabransky, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a great honor.
Very good. Well, thank you. So I have the benefit. Normally what I do is I go to school on a lot of the people that we interview because I get caught up. You know, I watch their movies. I have the benefit with you of having a little bit of advanced understanding of who you are, and I want to share that with the audience. So that's part of why we're here. So tell us a little bit about who you are and how it is that you got started in martial arts training, because that'll be the basis that we build off of.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, as Mark introduced me, my name is David Zabransky. I am a retired New York City police sergeant. I did 25 years on the force, just retired recently, 2019, early in the year. How I got started? Many decades ago, about 30 years ago, almost exactly, in September of 1990, I was a student at what was then the CW Post campus of Long Island University. And it was starting my last year in September, my fourth year, and you know, taking my regular courses, and I had some little extra space in my schedule. And I saw that the college was offering a Taekwondo class. So I said, you know, I've always been interested in martial arts. I said, you know, let me give this a try and see if it's something that, you know, I might be interested in. So, of course, joining that class was a class given by Grandmaster Y.H. Park. At that time, his school was in East Meadow. And he would come and he would train me in about, I guess there was maybe 10 students in the class, and we had a little section in the college, a little gym area, mats, and we just met there every week, and that's where I got started. After the curriculum was over, he offered everyone a chance to continue the training at his school, in East Meadow. And I think I might have been one of the only students who actually took him up on that. You know, a lot of other people just wanted the exercise, and they it was nice, and then they moved on with their lives. But, you know, the college class earned me my yellow belt, and he invited me to join the school, and I did. And the rest is history. That was 30 years ago.
Now, that's interesting, because if you look demographically across the board at Taekwondo practice, there's a large cluster of people in the youth range. And then generally when people get to college and then starting of career, there's a huge fall off. And then there's to some degree a resumption, not at the high level of children. But you sort of went against the grain, because you were sort of at the end of your college career, starting your professional career, and you stayed with it continuously through to this day. That's correct?
Well, I did take some breaks during time. You know, life throws you curveballs, broken leg, marriage, children coming. So I did take breaks from time to time. And but over the 30 years, you know, I always managed to come back. I will say that the original reason, you know, besides the fact that there was room in my schedule in college, the original reason I did had the original interest in martial arts was I was looking for a career in law enforcement. My major was criminal justice. I had aspirations towards FBI or, you know, some sort of other policing. I fell into the NYPD, and I loved it when I was there. But that was the original reason I joined, because strictly for a self-defense aspect, you know, not really for any of the other things that martial arts are known for, you know, the discipline, the honor, the respect, you know, the inner growth, everything that comes along with it. But originally, to be honest, was the only reason was the self-defense aspect, because I knew the career, that path that I was choosing.
That's interesting. And again, I think, you know, from speaking to the volume of people I've spoken to over the last 10 to 15 years, you know, why do you get involved? It's when you're young, a lot of times it's my parents got me involved. The other aspect of it is I saw the Karate Kid, I saw Enter the Dragon, right? And then there's another cluster. I spoke to a gentleman in Great Britain who got involved because he had been assaulted. So he got involved. The self-defense aspects, whether it's preventatively or in reaction to something, is usually the third reason that people ultimately get involved. So did you find in the course of your, a sort of a two-part question, which was number one, did you find having martial arts training in the New York City Police Department made you, was the norm? Do most of the folks there have it, or was that the exception? And the second part of it, probably a little bit more personal, is did you feel that it benefited you in any way, either psychologically or in terms of your preparedness for certain things, having the martial arts training and continuing with it?
Absolutely. The first part does anyone else do training? Over my career and all the people I've spoken to, I would suspect, and
it's not a scientific poll.
This is just my gut feeling. I would suspect that probably in the upwards of 70 to 80% of people in law enforcement look outside of the job that they work for their private training in some sort of defense, whether it be a martial art, whether it be firearms training, whether it be, you know, speaking to people or any. But I would suspect there's a high number of officers that do take it upon themselves privately to train themselves. Yeah. And as far as assisting me, I know the common answer, and that what everyone thinks is, you study martial arts, you learn how to fight, so that's great for being a cop, you get to beat up people. But the real answer that I'm going to give you is it absolutely helped me in every aspect of my career, because it brought a sense of calm to my personality. When people get into high-stress situations, everyone reacts differently, you know. Some people shut down completely. Some people rise up and get crazy themselves. And now you have two crazy forces opposing each other. And, you know, that never works out good. But I found that the more I trained, and let's just call it what it is. Let's just say, you know, training to fight, right? The more I trained and the more you learn, the more sense of calm and the more sense of confidence that you get, that you can handle yourself. And with that brings us this sense of calm that comes over you, so that when you do encounter maybe possibly a violent situation or a situation that could escalate to violence, you don't take it up that ratchet, because you don't feel you don't feel like you're in danger of being attacked.
Right.
I feel like if you attack me, I'm going to win. I don't get raised up and say, I'm going to have to scream and yell at you to calm you down. I stay calm myself. And I would say 95% of the time, anytime I ever arrested someone, I was able to talk them into handcuffs, you know, because I never raised up to that psycho, crazy, yelly, screaming, you know, persona right. that happens sometimes during confrontation.
That's great. And that doesn't shock me knowing you. And, you know, anybody that I've spoken to who's seriously trained in the martial arts for as long as you have, and, you know, maybe people for not as long, but people who have taken it seriously, everybody has almost exclusively said the same things without exception, that the knowledge, the confidence, and the ability to fight has helped them to de-escalate, non-escalate, and be able to know that, you know, you have nothing to prove, and that ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, there's no desire to do that, and then it's helped them to walk away from situations. So it really is something that I think when people hear it, they think it's a cliche, but the, you know, my conversations with folks who are serious folks, serious, who I consider to be real martial artists, I, for the use of that term, absolutely supports your experience. So somebody who's been in it.
There's a, when you mention the word cliche, there's a phrase that maybe people hear in the movies sometimes, and they say, you know, why do you learn how to fight? And the answer is, you learn how to fight so that you don't have to fight.
Right. Right.
You know? It's a vicious circular cycle. It's like, you learn to fight, you get super confident, you stay calm. That means you can talk your way out or de-escalate a situation. This way you come around to the beginning and you never fight to begin with, because you are able to stop the fight before it even happens.
Absolutely. I had a great talk with Dave Young, who, you know, we took training with Dave, and David and I talked a lot about, you know, pre-escalation, where you get to the point where completely before a situation escalates, being able to read the signals and be able to diffuse before it ever gets to the point of ever being able to be concerned about, you know, and he does this on a, you know, regular basis. So it's interesting. So tell me, in terms of a couple of things, we jumped in. So you jumped into martial arts training, and you made a comment that you had always wanted to do that. Were you someone as a child who had great interest in things like martial arts movies? I mentioned Enter the Dragon, martial arts television, that kind of thing. Did you have access to it? What kept you from doing it earlier in your life?
I guess being so young, my parents never pushed me in that direction.
Right.
I never had any friends that did it, you know. Only towards when I started getting old, I was 20 years old in 1990. And I guess my aspirations towards law enforcement got me thinking on my own to say, you know, what's something I could bring to the table to help me protect myself? Because you know how mothers get, oh my God, you want to be a policeman? You're going to be, it's such a dangerous job, you know? So you start thinking yourself, well, how can I protect myself more? And that's really where it started. It wasn't because of movies or because of anything else or any other.
Did you have a fondness for those things? And do you have a fondness for those things now?
You know, listen, I was a teenage boy growing up. I mean, everyone likes action movies, you know?
Right.
Everybody enjoys that kind of stuff. But no, that didn't make me want to do it myself. It was really only the thought of, I'm going into a field.
It was a very practical approach to the situation. That's good. Much greater, much less opportunity for disappointment, right? When somebody goes into it thinking that they're going to be the next Jean-Claude Van Damme or you know, Philip Rhee, you know, that there's a very small percentage of people who train and can get there and then have that opportunity to do those types of things. So tell me, you have a great perspective because you've been virtually continuously for over 30 years training in the martial arts. What changes have you seen in terms of the approach to martial arts training, the demographics in terms of, you know, today is so, you're similar in age to I am. I think I'm a little older than you, but when I was a child, there really weren't children's programs that were available. Even probably when you were in college, it was a little bit different, but now there's a much greater movement towards children's programs. What have you seen in terms of the difference in terms of training and in terms of the approach to you know, the martial arts and things of that nature over the course?
Well, I mean, you know, martial arts in general is thousands of years old. So I would say the techniques that you learn, kicking, the punching, you know, the physical activity, the health aspect, I don't think much of that changes much. But there is one area where I think there has been tremendous change in this era that we're in. And I would say that would be in the competition area. All right. Many years ago, Taekwondo wasn't really looked at as a sport, right? Only in the early 90s did it become an Olympic sport,
right?
And be more recognized all over the world as something that people would come together to compete in, you know, on a friendly stage. So I would say over the years, the real changes that I would see would be in the competition area where, number one, there are more categories to compete in. I mean, when it first started, it was just either sparring,
right,
or board breaking, and maybe that would be it, you know, maybe some forms, pumse as they call it. But now it's grown into many, many things. There's team challenges, there's weapons challenges, and it's growing to a larger group of categories that you can compete in. Also, within each category, the rules have changed.
Right.
You know, like I said, when I first started, it was just, how do I protect myself out on the street?
Right.
But maybe we'll get into it now. And it's like, all right, what competition am I going to? What are the rules I have to follow? I mean, years ago, a roundhouse kick was 1 point, you know, now right. All of a sudden it's 2 or 3 points, you know,
right.
Kick to the head, maybe 3 points. Now it could be 5 points. I mean, and you know, the rules and what kick you can do and how many times you can back up and defend yourself before you kick. A lot of rules come into play that have changed over the years, which just makes the competition, more, you know, competitive. And judges have to have a way of scoring their people, you know.
Sure.
But as far as the old school actual martial art itself, I would think that it just chugs along at a slow rate and everyone just enjoys it as it is, you know.
Well, I get the sense that you, similarly to me, never allowed that type of path, that other folks may have had a competitive path. Other folks may have been driven by those types of things. That really didn't alter your Taekwondo journey. In other words, it didn't change your experience because you didn't look to get out of it those things. The same as I didn't. I never considered the thought that when I got involved, I was going to be on an Olympic path. And as a result, it never impacted my training. I never felt excluded from the training because of the fact that that wasn't part of my journey.
That might be as a result of the age that we started too.
You know, that's true.
I was 20 years old. I don't know how old you were started, but you know, a kid that starts when he's 6 or 7, you know, the only real path he has is to compete, because who wants 7-year-olds fighting in the street? You know?
No, that's true. That's very, very true. That's a great point. That is a great point. It's also a product of the institution because, for me, prior to coming to the parks, the school that I was in was much less competition based, much more, really very full contact self-defense based. But I found that in the journey with the parks, that the curriculum has a great ability to have people shine in the area that they want to shine. So if you have a great love of weapons, swords, nunchucks, there's a place, you know, there's a little bit of that. If you're learning to compete, pumse, there's that. And that the curriculum is relatively broad. So that may have been part of it as well, is that you tend to say, all right, I'm going to look forward to forms week as opposed to sparring week, that kind of thing.
As the time, you know, that I was as an instructor and a master at YH Park School. And, you know, obviously when you teach a wide range of students.
Sure.
And like you say, some people gravitate towards self-defense. Some people gravitate towards form. Some people gravitate towards sparring. And Master Park even said to me one time, he says, you know, you have to, when you train your student, you have to train them in their Taekwondo.
Right.
You know, what they are interested in, you know. You give them a smattering and a taste of everything, but when you see them gravitating in a certain direction, you have to train them the way, you know, the direction they want to go in, you know. Because me personally, anytime I would teach class, I would always look to get some self-defense in there, you know.
Sure.
My most heaviest interest, and I feel like it's helpful to everyone in the world, you know. And say there was a student that wasn't very good at it, you know, that would be okay because that's not their Taekwondo. Everyone gets into it for different reasons. Some people just go just for the exercise.
That's true.
They have no interest in defending themselves in the street, right? All they want to do is get their heart rate up, exercise, lose weight. I mean, everyone has their own reason for being there. And, sure. and as a good instructor and a good master, you have to understand that.
Well, that's extremely reasonable. So it sort of leads into my next question, which is that you have three children that are, you have more than three children, but you have three children that are high achieving, right? But three of them are involved. You have four children, but three of them are high achieving black belts. They're a little bit older, right? They're the three oldest of your children. But they're high achieving martial artists. They're extremely hardworking, gifted martial artists. How is it that that journey occurred? What is it that made you feel that, was it their desire? Hey, they saw their dad, on the mats and said, hey, I want to be out there. Or was it your guidance or a little bit of both? And what have you seen as a result of their participation in the martial arts?
Well, that's an interesting point because a tremendous amount of families and parents try to push their kids into doing what they want them to do, you know, whether it's martial arts or whether it's sports or whether it's anything else, right? So I never took that approach. I never wanted to force my kids into doing something. So as a leader, you know, and you teach this in the leadership program, the best way to inspire your students is to lead by example, you know? So I never dragged my kids to class and said, you have to start this now, you're old enough. What I did is I went to class myself, and I would come home and I'd be wearing my uniform, my black belt, right. You know, and my first two children, the two girls, at the time they were 10 and 8, and they saw me and they just said, I want to do that. You know, so right. I presented it in a way that made them interested, because if you don't have a child that's interested, they're not going to learn. You know, right. If a parent drops someone off and forces them to be there and they don't want to be there, they're not going to learn. So I wanted to introduce it in a way that made them interested first before I agreed to take them. So I signed them up, 8 and 10 years old, and they loved it. And they progressed very highly in it. After about a year, year and a half, when they got their purple belt, I have a younger son who, at the time when my daughters started 8 and 10, my son was 6.
Right.
And from my personal feelings about it, I didn't want to start him that young. I wanted to wait till they got older. But by the time he was 7, he was begging me to take him. I want to do what my sisters do, you know?
Right.
So I broke down. I said, all right, you're 7 years old. You're a pretty big kid. Let's go. And I brought him, you know? And those are the three that have really progressed very highly. My son and one of my daughters are both second-degree black belts. My middle daughter, third-degree black belt. And, they still enjoy it today. My fourth child, I have a younger – right now she's 14, never wanted to go to class. But over the years, she decided that I want daddy to teach me. So that's what we're doing at home.
I'm training
her on my own. That's at home. She's reached a level of what I agreed to be green belt. And, I train her when she's ready at home. And
that's wonderful.
But it's because of the interest she showed. Yeah.
That's great. Like you said, everybody, in all things, I think people learn in the way and in the environment that is most comfortable for them. And the important thing is that they get out of it what they, that they get something out of it. What have you seen? So then with all four of your children, you have a model. What have you seen as being the benefits? Can we talk about this? This is another aspect that we talk about all the time. Last week, I actually interviewed the gentleman who runs Chuck Norris's Taekwondo public school program in Texas. He's got 60 schools that they're funded to teach Taekwondo as a curriculum class in the public schools there for the middle schools. What have you seen as being the benefits for the kids of practicing the arts?
Well, the textbook answer would be, discipline and respect and physical fitness and confidence. And that's all fine. And a lot of parents do bring their kids to classes for that reason. Personally, I started off with them with the same reason that I started, because I wanted to give them an early start in learning how to protect themselves. You know, one day your daughters are going to grow up. They're going to be, right now my oldest daughter is 20 years old. And all of them down the line, getting older also. And they, when they go out by themselves, I can sleep at night because I know they can take care of themselves, you know. But as a parent, I always took it upon myself to teach my kids, honor, respect, discipline, calmness, honor. And I never went to a school for that reason.
Sure.
You know, that's something that enforces what you teach at home. You know, I know there are a lot of people that don't have the opportunity to spend that kind of time with their kids to teach that, or maybe they have kids who are influenced by other people and they can't break that cycle. So obviously a martial arts school is wonderful for that reason. They have an outlet, they have someone else to look up to, someone else to, you know, try to ingrain them in those necessary inner feelings of, you know, honor and respect and calm. But I always took it upon myself, me and my wife, obviously, to take that job. And I never really looked to school for that. So, you know.
But one of the things for me, I think, is I agree with you. And I always think it's always the parents' responsibility first, is that for me, taking my children there over and above everything else, is that I sort of knew that it would be a place that people that shared those values would gravitate, and that my children would be surrounded by other children where the families had similar values, that they had put a premium on respect and discipline and those types of things. So that I always found that to be the added benefit. I agree with you. While I think it's wonderful that those things are reinforced in the dojang, it would be remiss for me as a parent to expect that, you know, anything goes at home, but you know, Master Elliot Park is going to tell my kids how to be respectful and disciplined. But I did love the fact that there were so many other families there that put a premium on it.
Well, you know, the real key to any martial art, no matter what aspect you study, is repetition. You know, there's no one that can go to a class for, you know, a weekend for 3 days and go, oh, I know how to protect myself, or I know everything about honor. No, it's repetition. It has to be done over and over and over again. So whatever you teach at home, you bring them to the school, they teach the same type of living and the same type of attitude. It's only reinforcement. And, you know, it's repetition that really gets the job done.
That's a great point, and it's a great analogy. So in the interest of, obviously we have limited time, I'm trying to get as much in as I can in terms of your life and career. So you're in a different stage now. You, congratulations. You've retired after a successful career in the
won the game, as they say.
yes, that's phenomenal. And you're an active guy, and you're young as it relates to your life, and even as it relates to, even though you've been in martial arts for 30 years, there's a lot. What is your thoughts in terms of your martial arts teaching and practice as you now have perhaps maybe you don't have more free time on your hands? I know it's hard to tell, right? Because with this the pandemic, but you seemingly have more free time on your hands. What are your thoughts about the next stage of your life and your Taekwondo life?
I'm blessed to have my top two daughters in college now, and they're local colleges, so they're staying home. So everyone's still home with me. You know, no one's going away. I think we treated them too good.
Congratulations, I think. I think that's congratulations. That's good.
So, my day is filled keeping them on the right track, you know, reinforcing everything that we learn over the years, you know, giving them the best advice I can as they run into their problems. So right now, that's really what I'm doing. But down the road, say maybe when they get older and, you know, choose a career path and move out, or you know, and then I have more time to myself, or, you know, with my wife, I always think of in the back of my mind of opening a school of my own, you know. And my kids, of course, said, oh, we'll come teach for you if you do, you know. So that'll be a way to bring them home again once they, you know, find their way. But, that would be an interesting thing to do. But that's a little bit down the road, I think. You know, I still got a lot of things going on.
Sure. It's a family affair. That's great. That's great. Let me ask you, I think, in winding down your perspectives, because you have trained for a while. You started, like I did, in person, right? The pandemic has taken us all by storm, and it has dramatically altered the way that we've trained. Now I see that with your children, because I'm involved, that they've continued to train throughout the pandemic. They've used the electronic tools, the virtual tools that have been available to continue to train. What are your thoughts on training in this type of an environment and what lies ahead for us? Obviously no one has a crystal ball, right? And if you talk to 10 people, you get 12 opinions, but what are your thoughts in terms of what's happened and where we're going with this, you know, with training, especially, you know, sparring and stuff is
off the table. Yeah.
Right.
Now listen, this is a speed bump in life, you know, after this is over, we'll look back on it and we'll see it as just a hardship that we had to go through. The training is not ideal. It's not the way that, you know, you get the best training out, but it's something that you can offer the students for the temporary time being. And it just has to be looked at in that light. It can't be looked at as the way of the future. You know, there's a lot of things that we can't do. I mean, there's no physical touching, you know, so basically self-defense is off the table. There's no sparring. So, you know, that kind of training is off the table. And right now it's you could probably practice a lot of things that are more towards the competition aspect where you're doing forms or maybe board breaking.
Sure.
And also the health aspect, you know, just staying fit during times when people are home and, you know.
So a bridge.
That urge to go to the refrigerator and stuff themselves instead of staying fit. So it's a great outlet for that, but it has to be looked at as a temporary speed bump, you know, in the martial arts world. And hopefully we get through it.
I agree with you. And I think that there's many things in life that technology can replace, but martial arts training is not one of them. It is a good supplement. It's better, certainly better than doing nothing. It gives people the ability to check themselves and be checked and be disciplined. But there's nothing like the face-to-face contact, especially in the areas which I'm a big advocate for self-defense. And I think, you know, you cannot have enough self-defense training that's done realistically, repetitively, you know, with full force and full power. And you know, that's just an impossibility in this. You can practice the routines, but you certainly cannot get the realistic feeling without. So.
It's a tough balance, you know, between, you know, training like that and training a different way. I always like to give the analogy of, you know, some people ask, you know, besides all the, you know, the honor and respect and discipline and self-calm that you learn in martial arts, people ask, you know, so what do you train to fight for? I mean, you live in a nice community, you know, that you haven't had any problems your whole life. Why do people feel like they have to, you know, be rough and train and fight like that? And I always give the same answer. I said, you don't train to fight every day. You know, you don't train to defend yourself every day. We're on this earth for, God willing, 90 years or more. And when I look at training, I say, during that 90 years or more, I'm going to train myself for the 7 to 10 seconds that I may encounter something somewhere along that road. You know, and it may only be once in life. But during that 7 to 10 seconds, you're either going to wish you knew how to protect yourself or you're going to fall victim to the...
That's absolutely outstanding. That is absolutely well said. And I got to tell you that perspective on it, I probably never heard it articulated that way, but it's fantastic. I think that is probably in the hearts and minds of a lot of folks who practice. But the way you said it, it was really well said. And I couldn't agree with you more. And again, from my perspective as a guy who doesn't, you know, I never went in there to train to be the top ranked sparring competitor. And, you know, I enjoy Pumse, but I'm not a competitor. There's a million reasons I train, but probably most important is probably that. I agree with you. And
that's what we said before about you have to, you know, train your own Taekwondo.
Sure.
What's it in for you, you know?
And absolutely.
Everyone have a different path, you know?
Absolutely. So I would ask you in finishing up, I don't know if I probably... Yeah, you've given so many words of wisdom. Do you have any advice for anyone interested, anyone starting on their martial arts journey? Anything you've gone from, you know, white belt to master. You've been there continuously. You've seen all of, as you said, all the bumps and nuances in the road. A piece of advice that you can give someone who's just getting started or early on in their journey about their martial arts training and career?
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, at some points during my training, when I took breaks for various reasons, you know, speed bumps in your life, you take breaks. I did start at some other schools, you know, and, you know, just say, oh, let me try this, just to get a little well-rounded, sure. See what else is out there in life, you know. And some schools I went to, the training was horrible and the attitude of the students towards each other was horrible, you know, where, you know, when you're working with a person and let's say, you know, you're practicing a certain self-defense move and the attack is, you know, someone stepping in with a straight punch, right? The person that you're working with is supposed to play the victim. They're supposed to be the guy that's, you know, coming at you and is going to, you know, be the victim in the scenario. And I would train with someone who would be like, he wouldn't punch the right way. And I say, well, why aren't you doing it the way you're supposed to so I can do my technique? Right. Oh, I would never do that in real life. You know, it's not about you. It's right. about my training, you know. So I would say anyone who's getting started, definitely get started. And but you have to visit the school and you have to talk to people first. You know, you have to, you know, sit and watch a class, see how the class is run. Does it have the level of discipline you want? Or is it a bunch of goofballs just hanging out together on a Saturday, you know, trying to one-up each other? You know, is there a real training going on, you know? And the other thing I would say is it doesn't really matter what martial art you choose, you know, do something because everyone has an aspect that's beneficial to you. One school I went to, the person asked me, oh, so have you had any training? I said, yeah, well, I'm a black belt in Taekwondo. Oh, Taekwondo, oh, you don't want to study that. Let me tell you why my school's better.
Right.
Something like that, walk right out.
I don't blame you.
Because if you have a master or a school that's going to put everyone else down just to make themselves look great, that's not the school you want to be in. Because what kind of lessons are they going to teach you in life? You know what I'm saying? That's if someone correct. Came into my school, I'd be like, that's fantastic. You know Kung Fu? Wow, I'm so impressed. You know, let me show you some of what we do and maybe we can help each other, right? That would be more of a better answer. You'd know what kind of school you're getting into, right?
Absolutely.
So little signs like that would be, you know, whether I walk out the door or whether I actually stay and try something.
I agree. And I think, you know, a lot of people choose, whenever I ask people why they chose their martial arts school, the geographic proximity is many times the first answer. And I do understand that because you want to have a school that's close, but it certainly shouldn't be the only answer. You need to understand.
Pick the one with the cheapest price.
Right. Exactly right. And you know, if it's going to be a significant part of your life, and particularly if your children are going to be there, you need to understand what's going on. So that's great. Master David Zebranski, I want to thank you for speaking to us today. It really is an honor. I enjoyed speaking to you. It was just really great. I've enjoyed obviously training with you, getting to know you over the years, getting to know your family. You are really all great martial artists and great human beings. And I look forward to a long and continued path training alongside of you. So I want to thank you very much for talking to us. And for sharing a little bit about your journey and about your life, and congratulations on your early retirement. When I say early, it's such a youthful age. So
I know. I stop telling people because they just get mad at me. So
they get mad, right? Oh, that's terrible. So you should be much older, right? When you're retired, you think that you want to be at a point where you retire and you can still enjoy your life, right? So many people retire and then they just sit and wait to pass away or something, or they're too old to do anything. So.
We'll see what happens on the horizon. We'll see.
It'll be great. It'll be great thing. So thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me.